Well, welcome, everybody. Welcome to Common Sense Revisited on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your co-host, Todd McGreevy, and you are listening to us on August 3rd, Saturday, 2013, on the Republic Broadcasting Network, as well as, with a short delay, on noagendastream.com in the morning to all you No Agenda listeners. I'm being joined by my co-host, Corey Ibe. Hi, Corey.
How you doing?
We're doing well. We're kind of under duress this evening. You're out in Orange County, and you've got a lot going on. And I think you're cutting in and out. We have as our other co-host today, one of our avid engaged listeners, Tim from Illinois, is here. Tim, you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hey there. Excellent. Yeah, Tim is just across the bridge here and down the road in Illinois. For me, I'm here in Iowa. Corey's out in Orange County, California. Corey, you still there?
I am still here. I think we got it connected now.
Excellent. Excellent. And, you know, thank you for listening, everyone, to Common Sense Revisited. We're doing another pre-recorded show, so be no call-ins today. It's going to be Corey, Tim, and myself, Todd. And we're Tim's really thrown us a lot of bones here lately, Corey. We haven't had a chance to digest it. He's been really heavily researching Maryland Constitution. There's another case he found that is backing up Texas v. White, and I think it's going to be an excellent addition to this show, this episode. But before we get to all that, you've been pretty active out there in Orange County, Corey. We've talked about the sunflower seed incident on previous shows, right?
Yes.
Remember that?
We have, absolutely, and it's now progressed. There's a lot more on the line now.
Yes, this is not for the meek and not for the faint of heart. And we've talked about that many times on this show. And, you know, Corey, it's a sad day in America when you are vilified and considered a criminal until proven otherwise in the statutory system. When we have people like Corzine getting away with billions of dollars, former governor of a state, former senator, just billions are just missing, and it's all good, you know. And meanwhile, you refuse as one of the people of California, 1849, to identify yourself as a piece of property, and subsequently, you essentially are hunted down to appear in the court.
Yeah. Irvine PD has been very active. Just yesterday, they, under the guise of somebody reporting my automobile as being suspicious, they came out with no warrant or anything the day before the hearing today, and just went through the car. No, nothing. Of course, it was under the guise that this is a suspicious vehicle and we need to check it out, which means they go through the whole thing.
And let's try and give any new listeners on either the stream or on RBN a quick overview. We're talking about Corey's efforts to live as one of the people of California, 1849. And that includes acknowledging that the birth certificate that has been attached to all of us when we were born, if you've been born in the last, you know, 50, 60 years, is a piece of property owned by the state. And subsequently, Corey was successful in obtaining a exempt plates for the automobile that it's hard to say that he owns. You don't really own it, do you, Corey?
Well, I have a financial interest in it. The government owns it, but I have a financial interest in it.
Yes, and many of you listening to this broadcast already realize what we're talking about. We don't own anything. They own it all, including you, as we all know, if you are a U.S. citizen, if you choose to run by the rules of D.C. And Corey has established himself as one of the domiciled in California and subsequently has taken many measures to live that way. And he was stopped with emergency flashing lights during a traffic jam several weeks ago. And ostensibly the reason was he was throwing sunflower seeds out the window.
And yeah, that's pretty much it. The officer observed a few sunflower seeds falling from the window. Emergency, turned on the flashing light.
Yeah, we lost you there. He'll come back in a second. We're going to plow through this.
I think I'm back. I just heard it go blank for a second.
Yeah, you are. You are.
Okay.
Don't move, Corey. Just stay right where you are, very still. Speak into the microphone very slowly.
Exactly. Well, let me just repeat that real quick. What happened was on back in the middle of June, I was in my car traveling, and the car, of course, a lot of people know on this show know that the car has exempt license plates, California exempt plates. And those were issued on the basis that the birth certificate is an individual and it is property of the state of California. And the officer issued a citation. The citation has numerous errors in it. And today in court, I don't know, should we go ahead and just get right into it real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Today was the day for the hearing, and I filed an appearance as well as a contesting the validity of the citation. What I'm saying is, hey, I am not the person on the birth certificate. I've made that very clear. I've created my ID. I don't do anything that I recognize that completely as their property, and doing everything I can to operate in honor as one of the people of California within this government. Of course, this government doesn't want anybody operating in honor because they can't make any money off of it. And so what they did was they issued a citation. Today was a hearing, and at the end of the day today, the court issued a warrant for a failure to appear.
A warrant for the birth certificate.
A warrant for the birth certificate, but of course now they say you don't get a choice. You are the person on the birth certificate. They're not even acknowledging any difference as of yet. So what will happen is tomorrow, which will be after we hear this show on the air Saturday, tomorrow I'm going to go to court and go see the judge, and we'll figure out what happens from there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you refuse to identify yourself with the first and last name. The man is, as a man, as one of the people of California, you have a given name and a family name. And that's Corey Ibe. And those of you that are new to this subject matter, I'm sure there's some of you listening to this broadcast, you know, the challenge is that the title, first and last name, is property. And so when you identify yourself with the first and last name, you're saying you are property of the United States. And when you're property of the United States, that means you're inside the 10 square miles of D.C. where they have exclusive legislative jurisdiction whatsoever. So they can be as psychotic and as hypocritical and as unfair and as tyrannical as they want to be.
And yes. In that jurisdiction, they can treat you as a man or any other animal.
There you go. Exactly. And if you are a man that chooses to identify yourself as a resident of the state of X, as a U.S. citizen, and we do this by conscription, and you know, when you get it, you sign your parents signed you up for public schools. You know, is a child a U.S. citizen? Yes. You know, you signed up for a financial aid to go to college. Are you a citizen? Yep. I mean, it goes on and on. So we're being a little bit redundant here for many of our listeners. We're going to have a break in about a couple minutes. You've done what we've talked about on this show for months and months, Corey. You've made an appearance without filing a plea, but you made that appearance via the paperwork that you filed at the clerk's office 2 or 3 days ago, correct?
That's right. That might be a mistake that I made. And like I say on the show, whenever something doesn't go right in court, a good thing to do, a good practice, is to default to look at yourself and what you did wrong. I may have filed the paperwork wrong and put the judge in a position where he couldn't look at the paperwork as being valid. So I'm not yet ready to say that the judge did anything wrong. I'm going to go to court tomorrow and see if I can correct any mistakes that I made. Of course, you know, I know most people, the amount of faith they have in the judiciary is pretty limited. But I do think that the vast majority of the problems, and even with this case right now, I think that I've identified a mistake that I made. And I'm going to go in and attempt to correct it tomorrow. And they've issued a warrant. So right now, the court case says that the birth certificate has a warrant out for it and that it's a fugitive.
Is that customary?
You know, I don't know. This is the first time this has ever happened. So I've never seen paperwork before. You know, I think it is customary that if you're a failure to appear, you become a fugitive.
Right.
So I think that is customary, that there's nothing special there, but I'm not sure.
And to be clear, if the piece of property that the government thinks they own or does own fails to appear.
That's right.
Issue that,
they definitely charged the birth certificate. And, you know, one thing that I filed was a contest of charges, saying that that the birth certificate is contesting the charges, that the birth certificate is factually innocent, and that it was me as a man, I was the one that was issued the citation, and that if they want to bring charges against me, they need to bring charges against me with my title and my name, my given name, Corey, the family name, Ibe, and that they don't get to bring charges against me as their own property.
That would be a whole different matter for them to pursue, Corey. We're going to take a short break here, folks. We'll be right back with more Common Sense Revisited. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Common Sense Revisited on the Republic Broadcasting Network, also on the No Agenda Stream at noagendastream.com. And, you know, there is a really excellent tool that RBN has, everybody, that I'm learning more about. It is the call-in number. You can call in. Let me rephrase. The listen-in number, not the call-in number. This is a pre-recorded show. We're not taking calls today. But there is a number that is get your pencil ready if you want to write this down. This will be a phone number you can call in to listen in to all the hosts and shows you hear on RBN. I found out just the other day, you guys, that one of the show hosts on Sundays has 1,200 listeners on just the phone side alone, you know, which is, you know, more than, you know, double that what we traditionally have on the stream. So I was impressed with that. The phone number is 619-550-0901. 619-550-0901. I was also told by one of the producers at RBN that Statmiller got an award in the mail from vendor that provides the call-in as the number one listened to phone radio show on their network. So with like 4 million minutes or something. So I don't know, have all the details on that. It might even be up on RBN's site. I need to check, but I thought that was some interesting housekeeping there. So we encourage people to use that. So Corey, your filing of an appearance without a plea has resulted in purportedly a warrant for the birth certificate. And you made an interesting point before the break there. You know, if your mistake was filing it too early, you know, these judges, they get the luxury of acting very perfunctory, very, very, what's the word, not verbatim. What's the word I'm looking for when you interpret things very succinctly?
Well, they get to choose whether or not, like, if the rules apply or not. They can either go based on the merits of the case that was filed, or they can say, oh, you didn't follow rule 2.8.879, mm-hmm. and we're going to throw the whole thing out.
Well, or it's this, I can't even read below the filing date. I'm not even going to let my eyes look below this because this is not in compliance. It's filed too early.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I see nothing. I hear nothing. Right. I just have this little piece of paper that says, oop, he must have a warrant.
Yep.
You know, I could just see that. It's a path of least resistance.
Yeah, it could very well be that. In my previous filing where I did filed an appearance without entering a plea, that was filed on the day of the appearance. So in this case, what I did was I filed it early just to be safe. But now when I look at my error, maybe because the file stamp, the date on that doesn't match the date of the appearance, I may have made a mistake where the judge, like you say, he can't read below that. And there's no appearance, and they just did a warrant. Although the filing that went along with that appearance was a contesting the validity of the citation, because what they did was they sent charges against the person on the birth certificate, which is government property, but they issued the citation to me. And I'm not government property, so that is a basis to contest the citation, to say that the person charged was not the person issued the citation.
And is the act of issuing physically handing you the piece of paper?
Well, that's how I read the rules that I could find hardly anything on the rules on contesting a citation, which is not surprising. Mm-hmm. And that basically the basis for that is let's say, Todd, I had a copy of your driver's license and I get pulled over and I say, I'm Todd McGreevy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out you have a citation issued in your name. You could contest that citation and say, look, I'm not the one that was issued the citation. It was somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So the rules in there state that the prosecution is supposed to begin to prove that the person issued the citation is the person charged. And if they can't prove that, they're supposed to hold all of the charges and hold all the information. That way, if they do find the person that was issued the citation, that they can go ahead and charge that person. Now, in this case here, this puts them in a huge bind to expose the fraud and the, well, I don't know if it's fraud, but it's fraudulent morally, but legally it might work, which is the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking a 14th Amendment person and charging that person while issuing somebody else who's taken clear steps to politically disengage from being in that jurisdiction, trying to charge that other person. So the behavior of Irvine PD since all this has come about has been atrocious. Both Irvine PD, the Irvine City Clerk's Office, virtually everybody that I've dealt with in Irvine now, except for the original officer that pulled me over, which was Matt August. There's been no issues with him. I wish the entire police department was filled with officers like him. But I think we've mentioned on the show before that the chief of police does not have an oath on file at the county recorder's office.
And chief of Irvine.
The chief of Irvine. Yeah, the chief of police for Irvine. And all the government code, everything says that a chief of police is an officer of the state, and that an officer of the state whose jurisdiction is local must file his oath of office at the county recorder's office. Well, of course, Irvine PD doesn't want to acknowledge any of that because it creates real problems for them. But even more important and even more troubling is that the Irvine City Clerk's Office will not respond to any questions as to where they get their authority to record the oath of office for an officer of the state. And yesterday I was on the phone with them trying to get information, just saying, if you are allowed to record this oath, show me where you get the authority for it. And of course, they don't want to respond. But what I found very interesting was the main guy that I'd been dealing with, he's a deputy clerk, he quit last week.
Oh.
And so that I found very interesting. In this economic environment, to quit a job at GovCo, with apparently no notice, just quit the job, is very interesting because I've been backing him into a corner. And by just asking questions. And the big question is, where does the Irvine city clerk get the authority to record the oath of office for an officer of the state? Now, I don't believe they have that authority. That authority is granted to the county recorder's office unless the Irvine city code specifically provides otherwise. And there is no Irvine city code that provides otherwise. Irvine's not provided any code or reference on where they get the authority to record an oath of office for the chief of police. And the county recorder has issued a certificate of non-filing for the chief of police. So we've got a real problem here in Irvine. And now the behavior of Irvine PD is really pretty scary for them to come out and just go through my car saying that it was suspicious. They're just trying to develop some sort of information, I believe, to just have me in custody.
Corey, you obviously didn't get the memo. This is all pretend, all make believe, and we're going to enforce it with the guns and the brainwashing of television and movies and culture for the last 100 years that you just shut up, slave.
Yeah, we have stolen your republic. And we've replaced it with the administrative jurisdiction of Washington, D.C., and just deal with it. That is really what their actions are saying.
Yeah. And there have been a handful of people, I think, that you and I have talked offline. It's not just Officer August. There's a couple others that I think have been acting with honor as well. for with you. At least you're treating you, you know, decently and so forth. So, and let's remember that this is just the arraignment. This is just what, you know, many of us refer to as the cattle call or the milking parlor in the morning court. You know, do you plead? All right, there's no adjudication that would have happened even if you were there, but they just want to get you on record as, you know, identifying yourself as the defendant. And, you know, how do you plead? And I've stood there before and said, I'm innocent. I'm not pleading either way. And they entered a plea on my own behalf. And, you know, many people have seen it. We ought to take a quick break, everybody. We're at the bottom half of the first hour of Common Sense Revisited. You're listening to us on August 3rd, 2013. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to Common Sense Revisited. And you're visiting with Tim from Illinois, Corey Ibe out in Orange County, California, and I'm your co-host, Todd McGreevy. And Tim, over in Illinois, you've been a longtime listener. You've been helping us with great, excellent documents. You had some questions during the break there that I thought were pretty useful, and one of them was about your experience at the Illinois DMV and Freedom of Information Act. Can you recap that?
Sure. Well, while engaging government there, and they refused to provide a copy of the application for a driver's license. And when I questioned them on what authority, they said that was policy, and I asked to see the policy, and they said they weren't allowed to share the policy with me. And in fact, they eventually called their lawyer, and the lawyer requested and demanded that I speak with him, and I don't know what I would say, he was quite yelling at me, but he was verbally aggressive and upset with my questioning and engagement with the DMV here locally. And I then went and did a little bit of research and found that Illinois has its own Freedom of Information Act. And interestingly, they are not obligated to provide any information in terms of a verbal response for my request. But if you do provide that in writing, I believe it's 5 days that they have to be able to respond, and they either have to provide you with that information or they have to be able to say that it is, I forgot the technical term, but that it's exempt from being able to have to share that information. And if they do say that it's exempt, then they are required to give the name and the office of who's making that decision so that you can either take action in terms of a lawsuit or bring in front of a board for a hearing of some sort. So I was asking Corey, is there some sort of similar law that's enacted either for the county or for the municipality that they're trying to avoid having to give any response? If you ask verbally and in writing, you might be able to force their hand.
You know, I, and Tim, kudos to you for sticking on that with the DMV out there and getting that. That's fantastic. The Irvine Police Department and the Irvine City Clerk's Office is definitely in dishonor to written requests. I've sent in numerous requests for the information related to the citation that I received, and they've just plain not honored that. They said that in one case, they said it's an ongoing investigation and that they don't have to turn over documents for an ongoing investigation, which is completely contradictory to the penal code as far as discovery for the citation. And I've also sent in Public Information Act requests to the city clerk's office with regard to policy, and they just straight up ignore it. And in most cases, what they do is they send any of my correspondence goes to Lieutenant Hallinan from the police department, and then he sends back a letter, which is really just a non-response. In fact, one of the letters that he responded to my questioning the chief as far as him not having his oath on file, they just plain said he's the chief of police because we say he is, and literally he says their law says that his oath should be at the city clerk's office. Well, I can find nothing in the law that says the officer of the state should record his oath at a city clerk's office. It says at the county recorder's office. And so there's really A lot on the line here for everybody. There's a lot on the line for me. There's a lot on the line for the chief of police. I mean, he's an imposter in office. And this kind of points out the fraud that many in our government are perpetrating on the American people.
You know, gee, Corey, it sounds to me like you're really splitting hairs, buddy. I mean, come on. The guy's the chief of police. He took an oath. So what? We filed at the city clerk's office. What's the beef?
Well, you know, I mean, if you didn't renew your driver's license or renew your registration, or if you're a doctor, you don't renew your doctor's license or anything else, you have significant consequences to that. If you're the chief of police, the law says that you can be made chief of police, but within a certain period of time, you have to get your oath down to the county recorder's office. Otherwise, you abandon your office. And if somebody's abandoned their office and they're only imposing the administrative form of government on the people of California, then that fits exactly the warning that was given to us by the legislature in California Government Code 1027.5, where it warned us about a communist takeover. Because a purely administrative form of government is a communist form of government.
You know, Corey, you're connecting the dots like no other. I'm telling you, it's got to be taxing to keep all this stuff straight in your head, man.
I'm sure looking forward to getting the Republic back and being able to just go back to work and make some money. This is really something that may take our entire lifetime. I mean, we've had multiple generations of people be lazy in this country and not hold government accountable and hold them to their oath. And we're the ones left holding the bag. And if we don't do something about it, they're just.
Yeah, you cut out there. And while he's trying to reconnect, I'm going to put a plug in. You know, Corey, go to CoreyIbe.com. CoreyIbe.com, and consider making a donation. He's got a PayPal account there. I think he even has a pocket constitution that you can get with any donation. And, you know, please consider, you know, sending some scratch his way out in Orange County, because it's not easy being one of the people of the several states in this tyrannical situation. And he's really paving the way for many of us that want to hold government accountable and change behavior. Corey, you there?
I am here. I think I dropped off for a bit there, Todd. Yeah. Sorry about that.
No worries. Gave me a chance to plug your website and for people to go there and help the cause. Cause, I don't know. I listen to a lot of different, talk radio. I listen to a lot of different, a lot of media. Okay. At once, read a lot, listen a lot. And very few people are doing anything but complaining, Corey. And so
yeah.
I just really applaud your efforts. We've got about 3 minutes till the next break, just a heads up. And Tim, you said also on one of the breaks, you know, you asked Corey what his next steps were and filing something on behalf of the birth certificate, or what was that question?
Yeah, what capacity are you going to engage the court?
Well, I'm going to engage the court myself as a friend of the court, and I will willingly tell them that I was the one behind the wheel. I was the one issued the citation. Here's my identification, and here's the jurisdiction I live in. They don't want that. They want to charge the birth certificate, and that's their whole thing, is if they charge the birth certificate, that's their own property, and the birth certificate has no constitutional rights. It is
protected rights. Protected rights.
You are correct. Thank you, Todd. No constitutionally protected rights. It has just privilege. So the whole thing of way I'll engage the court is just telling them the truth. The truth is, I'm a friend of the court. I'm here to tell you who I am. The birth certificate is factually innocent, because the birth certificate had nothing to do with the driving. And
were you driving or traveling?
Well, I was traveling, but they're charging the birth certificate with driving.
Got you.
And so the whole point there is I'm you know, the truth is easy to remember, and
that's true.
And so that's how I plan to engage with the court. And we'll see what happens. You know, the court in Orange County has a history of putting people in the state mental institution for trying to claim that they're somebody other than the person charged. So there's definitely some risk involved in what they're doing. And, you know, we'll just see what happens. That's how I plan on engaging with the court, is filing an appearance on behalf of the birth certificate tomorrow. And then I'll talk to the judge as a friend of the court to let him know that, hey, it was me that was in the car, not the birth certificate. The birth certificate is the registered owner, and it is, that's prima facie evidence that it is an individual that's property of the state of California.
So when you try and engage the judge or the court, I assume you're doing that in his chambers and not, there isn't an open area in terms of the court to be able to engage them in the courtroom, or I'm sorry, in the administrative hearing.
You know, my plan is to file tomorrow an appearance where the file stamp and the appearance document both match. So it shows that there's an appearance. And then I'll go into the courtroom by special appearance as a friend of the court to tell them who I am and reiterate the situation. I just will never identify myself as the person on the birth certificate. I just won't do it.
What was the date for the hearing supposed to be?
Well, the date was today. And this
July
afternoon,
July 31st.
Yeah, July 31st. Today was the date of the hearing. And there were two documents filed. There was an appearance document to show that the defendant appeared. And then there was also contest of charges where you go through and contesting the charges. Go ahead.
We've got to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody, to Common Sense Revisited on the Republic Broadcasting Network and listened with a time delay at noagendastream.com. We're visiting with Corey Ide, my co-host, who is one of the people of California 1849 and is dealing with an appearance issue and a warrant for his for the birth certificate's arrest. Tim, you had a question during the break regarding if Corey's going to go and address the judge as a friend of the court, what's the mechanics of that look like? Do you just walk up to the bench? You know, you're going to cross the bar, Corey? Do you go in the back room? I know in our courthouse where I am, we all kind of make fun of it. There's a door and it says no admittance, and all the attorneys just file in and out of there. They just go have ex parte communication all day long, you know? And a friend of mine just walked in there one day and just sat in there. You know, he was doing some pro se work for himself and all this. And it was a little bit comical, you know? I mean, are you just going to roll back there?
You know, I really don't know. I'm going to have to – I've never been in this situation. I've never had anything like this. I mean, we're dealing with just an out-of-control government. The officer that issued the citation was operating off of the authority of the chief of police. The chief of police, the county recorder, says he is an imposter. And the paperwork's all been filed for that, yet the courts still issue a warrant for the birth certificate. And then the police are going to say, that's you. So I'll just have to play it by ear. I mean, I really don't know exactly how this is going to work. And of course, remember, what we're looking at here is driving without a license. It's a misdemeanor, and it's relatively minor compared to the issues that I'm bringing up for my opponent. My opponent, the chief of police, the officer that issued the citation, the courts, everybody – everything is on the line for them with this, because if I'm right, this opens the door to help the people to be, at least when it comes to traveling and dealing with the courts, it's kind of a door to see that don't have to identify yourself as the person on the birth certificate. You can identify yourself as one of the people and in the jurisdiction of the state rather than federal jurisdiction, which is what the 14th Amendment is. And you know, the 14th Amendment, as much of a scam, for lack of a better term, that is, that's been perpetrated on the American people, it is the organic law of the United States, at least here in California, it's been ratified, and that's something we have to deal with.
You made a comment earlier about that if the prosecution finds that the individual issued the citation is not the same person that was on the citation, that they need to hold that information in case the right individual can be identified. Correct?
Something that's right. Effect. Yeah.
And so let's hypothetically, you know, say that they went, oh, well, we're just going to thank you for pointing that out, Corey. We're going to go ahead and we're going to take the citation. We're going to cross out first name and last name and write in Give us your give a name and family name and write that in properly, and then we're going to issue a citation.
Well, you know, if they do that, then that would be very interesting, because now brings up a whole bunch of other issues. The birth certificate, for one, at least my birth certificate on there, it shows a couple of things. The nature of that person is a bastard. In other words, it's an illegitimate child of two parents. And it's also domiciled in it's a 14th Amendment person, which means it's federal property. So that if you're federal property, that would make you a resident of California. And we've covered this on the show before, where residents are subject to all the laws of the state, just like an employee would be. And the vehicle code in California is very clear, 21052. It says that the vehicle code applies to people who are employed by the state. Now, on my given and family name, if they want to charge that, then I can simply say, one, I'm not an employee of the state. I'm one of the people. I'm in a completely different jurisdiction. And that jurisdiction is state rather than federal. And I would be able to fight it in a different way that I wouldn't be able to do if I'm forced to identify myself as a 14th Amendment person, you know, the birth certificate.
I can't remember if I heard it on another show on this network or where I heard it, but someone made the comment that they, meaning GovCo, the tyrannical statutory administrative hearing officers, we call it the milking parlor here in Scott County, they can't extract wealth out of you unless you're their property.
That's right. Yeah, they can't. They can't extract wealth from the people. They can extract wealth from their own employees and residents, which are U.S. citizens.
And in the world that one of the people of the several states exists in, domiciled, California 1849, here in Iowa 1846, you know, their common law is what prevails. And in common law, if there's an injured party, then there's restitution. And I mean, I'm speaking very, you know, macro here. I'm not an expert in common law by any stretch of the imagination, but I do get the premise that, you know, if there is an injured party, then there is a trial, you know, with a jury, and jurists are involved, and restitution is made. And restitution means, yes, I injured my neighbor, and the sentence is X. I'm going to restore, you know, my neighbor, take care of that. You know, if you accidentally killed the neighbor's father, you'd be in charge of, you know, raising their kids. It would be restitution, you know. And if you didn't, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Corey, where common law prevailed, then you were an outlier or an outlaw, and you couldn't do commerce. You couldn't buy groceries or get a job because everybody would castigate you out because you didn't play by the rules that everybody agreed upon.
Exactly. And another thing that's interesting is, when I was stopped by the officer, he asked me for identification. I gave him my common law non-political ID. Mm-hmm. I've extricated myself from the political system here at a lot of effort, and my intent has been very clear that I do not want to participate in Washington, D.C.'s fraud. I want to be one of the people of California and domicile in California. Yet the officer comes back with the citation, and he has just simply converted which is a crime, converted my given and family name into government property. Yet there's he signed under penalty of perjury that the person charged is it was the same person as the registered owner of the car. Now, the registered owner, in order to qualify for that, the registered owner is an agency of the state of California. 4155, I believe, is the vehicle code. So what he's saying on that citation is that the person he pulled over is government property. I mean, it is just very, very clear. Yet I've rebutted that. And so far, to my knowledge, nothing has happened to the officer for perjury or anything like that, which is unlikely to have happened. I mean, that, you know, it's just a scam that they have perpetrated on the people. And they say, look, we wear the guns and the badge, and we take away whatever property we want from you guys whenever we want.
Yeah, this is indicative. I mean, we've all seen the YouTube videos of the raids, and that we've read the news stories of the, mm-hmm. you know, oh, we, my apologies. we the SWAT team went in the wrong house and we killed the wrong dog. You know, we killed the wrong grandma. You know, I mean, they're just out of control.
And, that's right.
And you are bringing a level of reality to them that they're just not used to. And I'm hopeful that the judge was like wiping his brow of the sweat and went, oh, goody, I don't have to deal with this today because he filed it on the wrong day. You know,
that might be the case. Again, like, I got to take responsibility for any mistakes that I've made. And I have a financial interest in the person on the birth certificate. I'm the one that obligated to that person to a appearance. But I've never identified myself as that person. They're the ones that are pushing this political agenda out that we all have to identify ourselves as government property. And that is exactly what a Revolutionary War was fought over. The founding fathers fought a war to get the king out of here and to have freedom in this country and build a government that was here to serve the people. And over the last 100 or so years, that's been eroded away mainly by apathy and, you know, like frogs in a pot of water just turn up the heat. Nobody's jumped out of it. Well, as soon as some people begin to jump out, the government is having a difficult time recognizing that, because I think a big part of it is they know how unhappy the vast majority of American people are. I mean, Congress has an approval rating that's lower than gonorrhea. So if we're able to come up with a very simple method of pushing back on what I consider ridiculous money confiscating citations and having to pay rent on your vehicle in order to drive it around to a private corporation, to people that are constantly creating just more and more debt for the country and more burden. If you come up with a situation that you can extricate yourself from that, the criminals are going to do everything they can to stop you from being able to be free. Their whole goal is to make you property.
Well, thank you very much, Corey, for your efforts. You're probably not thanked enough, and appreciate it.
And Tim, I hate to interrupt you. We got to take a break with this top of the first hour. Going into the second hour right after this short break. We'll be right back with more Common Sense Revisited. You're listening to a pre-recorded show on July 31st. It's airing on August 3rd in 2013. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody, to Common Sense Revisited. I'm your co-host, Todd McGreevy. You're listening to us on the Republic Broadcasting Network and with a time delay on noagendastream.com. You're listening to the second hour of Common Sense Revisited. I'm visiting with Corey Ive, my co-host, and our special guest, Tim from Illinois. And this is being recorded on July 31st, 2013, for broadcast on August 3rd, 2013. We appreciate you staying with us at Common Sense Revisited. And, Corey, it dawned on me during the break that your circumstances out in Orange County, even if you were a resident and continued to identify yourself as a piece of property, and the big elephant in the room is the chief of police has no oath properly filed, and therefore all of the people that are working under him are just marauding around. Even in their own system, they're unlawfully acting. Is that correct?
Absolutely. There's the chief of police abandoned his office. They've not been able to provide any information. In fact, they've just gone completely silent. I mentioned before somebody in the city clerk's office has quit his job unexpectedly. And nobody can answer where the chief gets the authority to not file his oath in the county recorder's office and to have a copy of it at the city clerk's office. Go ahead.
This isn't just about Corey trying to be in a different jurisdiction and, you know, he just doesn't want to play by the rules the rest of us have to play by. I mean, this is a problem for every slave in Irvine.
Everyone, if you have a chief of police who does not have an oath of office on file, then he's abandoned his office, and the only thing he is doing is enforcing administrative law without the Constitution. It means they can do anything they want. They have there's no contractual obligation for them to uphold the Constitution.
Okay, we're going to get to Tim's documents here in 1 second. I just want to do another plea out there. If you're learning from what you're hearing on Common Sense Revisited, if you're inspired by what Corey's doing, if you are learning anything from his videos or our blog postings, and you have a little extra scratch to throw Corey's way, please go to CoreyIbe.com. And I don't do appeals very often on this show. I have done this show for over 4 years. I've probably asked for money maybe four times for some folks who are doing good work. Corey's one of them. And if you aren't willing or cannot or not able to, whatever the case may be, to help financially, then do something. And you've heard me say this before, listeners on the show. What are you doing? Then go find out if your chief of police has an oath of office on file or not, and find out how it works in your state and in your county. Do something. If you can't contribute to the work Corey's doing, then do something where you live. Start your common law ID process. Go to the blog. Go to CoreyIbe.com. Go to ThirdRailBlog.com. Check out the videos on the left. Get some action going here, all right, instead of just complaining about it. It's time to stand up or bend over. I'm sorry to be crass. It's this is the time, people.
Absolutely,
this blazing
is the
way.
Time.
So, yeah, if you recall, you guys had Roger Sales on, and he forwarded a saying: responsibilities plus duties equals rights.
That's right.
Or remedy, I think it was.
Yes, I think it was remedy. You're right.
That was what the definition of law for him.
And it's the people that have the responsibility to control government. Government is not going to control itself. It's the people that have to control government. And for a long time, we've let government run just rickshaw over everybody. And at this point, it's gotten really dangerous. We have, there's just so much going on with NSA snooping, everything. And it starts it from the bottom up. You have to go find out from your local chief of police, does he have his oath on file? Where is he supposed to have it? In California, the vast majority of chiefs of police, they need to have their oath on file at the county recorder's office. If they don't, then they're not really the chief of police. And we have to hold these people accountable for these things.
In fact, it's required. It's mentioned in probably every state constitution that is the duty of the people.
It is. Absolutely.
It's right
and
up
it
front.
Won't be easy. It's risky. Government's gonna, they're just. I know Tim. We've had a conversation before where you had a difficult time at the DMV just asking for a copy of the contract they wanted you to sign. So this is definitely an out of control government, and we need more and more people to step up and hold them accountable.
Let's take that instance for a second, Corey, and imagine that every individual who goes to renew their license or get their license actually said at the DMV, can I see a copy of that application, please? And they were told, no, you can't get it. And how many of them just go, oh, okay. I mean, we can't really change when people have truly lost their spine, can we? I mean,
that's right.
It doesn't matter to them, you know, principle or common sense or logic that I should be able to read the contract before I sign it. Oh, that's okay.
Yeah. And, quite often I find people find it very difficult to believe that our government has become despotic. They use things like, oh, that's just so stupid. They don't know what they're doing. Government's being stupid. I disagree. I think our government's been hijacked by a very capable enemy, and that our government is a cabal at this point of people who are not honoring the Constitution. They're using all the teeth of the Constitution to go after residents and doing everything they possibly can to deny the people any type of a remedy in dealing with their out-of-control behavior.
I think you're on to that, Corey. And one of the foundations of being one of the people of the several states is that there is a separation of jurisdictions and we've talked about Texas v. White many times on the show. And Tim, you found a case that was even backing up that. And before I go to that case, because I'm looking at the document, Tim, that you sent me that has the on the side citizenship. It's only a two pager. It's like the notes from a.
Is this excerpt from 1851 Maryland Convention, or is this the 1802 Naturalization Act?
Nope, the first. It's the first one, and it's saying that what Mr. Chambers is saying. It's saying what Mr. Weber is saying.
Yeah. Well, in short, this had to do with Maryland had a constitution established 1776, with numerous amendments. And then in 1851, there was a convention, and they ended up adopting a new constitution. And there's a change between those constitutions, and one of those changes includes the use of, in fact, if you're eligible to vote, one of the requirements to be eligible to vote in the 1851 Constitution is that you must be a citizen of the United States, where that was not there before. And in fact, it even goes further, and it requires the government officials, the governor, the General Assembly, which includes their House and their senators, and the judiciary system, to all be United States citizens as well. And I find it very interesting. Mr. Bowie in 1851 brought it up, and he had a rebut to this, which didn't get much attention, but he'd insisted. It says, Mr. Bowie suggested to the gentleman so to modify it, that portion of the act or the modification of the Constitution, as to insert the words, a citizen of the United States, I'm sorry, after the words, a citizen of the United States, the words, and of the state. So they were recognizing that you could be a citizen of the United States, but not a citizen of Maryland. So that could mean two things. One, you could have been a citizen of, say, Massachusetts, and at the time, that because you were part of the Union, that made you a citizen of the United States, which isn't the corrupt, tyrannical government and so forth that we've discussed earlier. But also, there was quite a bit of issue in that there would be foreigners that would come, so I think the legal term might be aliens, that would come into the country, and they would become naturalized citizens, and they would be citizens of the United States, but they wouldn't be citizen of a state, is my understanding. And in fact, this convention had quite a bit of debate on this topic, because apparently there was so much corruption that there were allegations that in order for people to win elections, that they were paying for the paperwork for the aliens to get naturalized in order, but would withhold that until the they would actually go to the ballot box and drop in a ballot for the person paying for the naturalization fee. And so there was lots and lots of debate on that. In fact, they had changed the Constitution, and that section of the Constitution related to that is called elective franchise.
Amazing.
They don't teach this in school, Tim. How'd you learn to look this up? This is, you know, this is crazy.
Well, you know, I think there are several states that have something similar. If you just go to look for their archives of the state that you're interested in, the one I was looking at was Maryland, and they have all the way back to the 1600s. They even have documents and studies related to what the charter was for Maryland. They have a lot of the proceedings for the actual chancellor, which would have been the court system at the time during the colonial days, all
Tim,
the way through.
I'm sorry to cut you off, buddy. We got to take a quick break. I wasn't watching the clock close enough. I want to talk more about this Mr. Bowie and what he said after he tried to rebut this. There's a critical thing he said. We're going to talk about that when we get back with more Common Sense Revisited. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Common Sense Revisited. I'm your host, Todd McGreevy, being joined by Corey Ibe and our special guest this hour, Tim in Illinois. So, Tim, this document you sent, it's essentially like the floor debate, right, of the convention in Maryland for the 1851 Constitution?
Yes.
Yes. And so after Mr. Bowie said that he wanted to have the words "and of the state" after the word "citizen of the United States," Mr. Chambers says the difficulty was that there were some 40 members of the convention who would express the same idea in different terms. Personally, I had no objection to it, except that it loaded down the section with phraseology, which could have no effect upon it. And what was Mr. Bowie's response?
Oh, he explained that the only difficulty he had about the matter was that, in fact, in his judgment, it was not in fact true that every citizen of the United States was a citizen of the state of Maryland for political purposes. So quite a distinction.
And Corey, are you seeing similar distinctions in your research in California?
Yeah, absolutely. There's
you know, the distinction between holding an office of profit in the United States. You cannot hold an office at the same time in the state of California. So they're showing the two different forms of government here. And it also references in the California Constitution of 1849 that you have citizens of California or citizens of this state and citizens of the United States, which are residents of California. And that is clear in the California Constitution. It's there's a real distinction between a United States citizen or a citizen of the federal government and a citizen of the state. And there seems to have been pressure from the very beginning to eliminate the status of being a citizen of the state and have the office of being a citizen of the United States or be in the federal jurisdiction.
Fully centralized at the foot of the crown there.
That's right.
You know, this right there in black and white for everybody to see if you just take the time to look at it. And it sounds to me that, you know, you brought up that 102.75 in the was that a statute of California?
That's California government code 102.75, where they are giving a warning to the existential danger to the state from a communist takeover trying to get into government and get offices both in the education system and in different areas of government, and that they have a communist agenda to take over the world.
So I think what I'm trying to assert, connecting a few dots maybe here, is that this, what Tim brought up in was happening in Maryland, the introduction of a United States citizen, not one of the citizens of the United States, meaning the, you know, several states, you know, that are united, but a United States citizen is being introduced even before the Civil War. And the 14th Amendment was a Reconstruction Act. It's like, well, we fought hard to be able to jam this down your throat, you know, and here's what you're going to get. You're going to get U.S. citizenship, and we're going to put it under the guise of freeing the slaves. And it sounds like it was being introduced. And the reason I'm trying to connect the dots with that statute that you talked about is that sounds to me like, hey, if you want to put a communist takeover in, you make everybody a piece of property of a centralized government. That's a quick way to establish that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
well, even back in the original Declaration of Rights for the Maryland state of Maryland in 1776, they have a statement in there that no person ought to hold at the same time more than one office of profit, nor ought any person in public trust to receive any present from a foreign prince or state, or from the United States, or any of them without the approbation of the state. So even then, for those that aren't familiar with it, August 14th, 76 is when this declaration was written. And the Declaration of Independence was only signed about 5 or 6 weeks before that, July 4th, 1776. So they had recognized that there was a distinct political venue for the United States that was separate from the states within the United States.
Yes, and in the California Constitution of 1849, Article 12, Section 5, it's a real quick little paragraph. I'll read it. It says, "Every citizen of California declared a legal voter by this Constitution, and every citizen of the United States, a resident of this state, on the day of election shall be entitled to vote at the first general election under this Constitution." There's a clear distinction between a citizen of California and a citizen of the United States in the California Constitution of 1849, and that one is a resident and one is a citizen.
And what's important, I think, to maybe traverse to why is that important, that Corey, you can't inhabit the Constitution of 1849. How can you do that? And I think that's where we get into Texas v. White and the case that is new to us that Tim found that backs up the Texas v. White, where those multiple jurisdictions do coexist. Is that correct?
Exactly. Tim? Yes.
Tim, what was that case you found?
That case is, interestingly enough, White versus Hart, 80 U.S. 646 in 1871.
Can you say that one more time real slow?
It was White versus Hart, 80 U.S. 646 in 1871.
Hart spelled?
H-A-R-T.
All right.
And talk to us about, is this the same white in Texas v. White?
No, I don't believe it is.
Okay.
My understanding from reading it, and I haven't read it in great, great detail, but it's, I'll read directly from it. What happened was, this was, my understanding was, there was a contract that existed prior to Georgia, which is the state in question, adopting a new constitution in 1868. And the constitution in 1868 indicated that no court or officer shall have, nor shall the General Assembly give jurisdiction to try or give judgment on or enforce any debt, the consideration of which a slave or the hire thereof, and so forth. So basically it had to do with property, and that infringed on an existing contract that was prior to the 1868 Constitution. And that contract occurred prior to the Civil War, and so the plaintiff was had lost in Georgia, lost in the Georgia Supreme Court, took it to the Supreme Court of the United States, and the Supreme Court of the United States essentially found, which this was only a year or 2 years, I don't know the exact date, after the Texas versus White verdict.
That was 1869.
It was 1869? Okay. That, in fact, let me quote what they said here. They said, the court, at no time during the rebellion were the rebellious states out of the pale of the Union. Their constitutional duties and obligations remained unaffected by the rebellion. They could not then pass a law impairing the obligation of a contract more than before the rebellion or now since.
That's pretty clear, isn't it?
It's as clear as it can be. And I would caution the listeners, either it's a typo or there's part of the case, this is from Justia that I'm reading, that is missing. If you look at the syllabus, they're numbered. I've been reading from number one, and there's no number two. So if you need to find that, we were educated by one of the callers several months ago that you need to look up the United States reports, which are only available in print form, and you'll have to go to a university that has a subscription to that and go physically and make a copy for yourself.
Yeah, they sure wouldn't want to make accurate information available on the internet now, would they?
No, that wouldn't be.
in that same fashion, I did find that the California Constitution of 1879 has been it's been amended over 400 times, and many of those amendments are not reflected in the Constitution the Secretary of State puts out for everybody. So the Constitution they put out for everybody to see on their website is nowhere near the actual Constitution they operate off of.
Dang. A lot of landmines for this matrix, Corey.
It is pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is.
It's pretty clear that dark forces that covet our freedoms are doing everything they can to keep us in the dark and not have the ability to...
We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned with more for more Common Sense Revisited. Welcome back, everybody, to Common Sense Revisited. You're listening to us on August 3rd, 2013. This is a pre-recorded show on July 31st, 2013. I'm Todd McGreevy, being joined by my co-host Corey Ivan, our special guest Tim in Illinois. And Tim, you were recounting to us, and Corey, you were talking about the various versions of the state constitutions. And Tim, you were talking about something during the break. You had a concern about the 1849. No, you're in Maryland, 1776 versus 1851.
Yeah, so if you look at those, essentially in the 1776 Declaration of Rights, I'm going to back up just a second. Several weeks ago or so, we had a caller, Drew, who was pointing out some various things related to charters and so forth. And the Declaration of Rights in Maryland starts out, "The Parliament of Great Britain, by declaratory act, having assumed a right to make laws to bind the colonies in all cases whatsoever, and in the pursuance of rich claim, endeavored by force of arms to subjugate the United Colonies to an unconditional submission to their will and power, and having at length constrained them to declare themselves independent states and assume government under the authority of the people. Therefore, we, the delegates of Maryland, in free and full convention assembled, taking into our most serious consideration the best means of establishing a constitution in this state, for the sure foundation and more permanent security thereof declare, and then their Declaration of Rights. So, in fact, if you look further in their Constitution, they have oaths, many oaths, and some of the penalties for oaths include, of course, removing from office, not being able to serve office again, and so forth, but it even went as far as you could be possibly banished from the state.
So in other words, what you're trying to say is Drew's concern or assertion that we never formed any governments, it was all corporate charters the whole way through, you're saying this preamble is antithetical to that.
That and the form of government and the penalties and the oath, I believe, and I'll have to look it up here shortly, that one of the oaths requires that you state that you have no allegiance to the to Great Britain or its king, and that you have allegiance to the state of Maryland.
Anything like that in California's constitutions, Corey?
No, I've not seen anything like that. Of course, now the California didn't come into the Union until 1850, so it was a little bit different mindset. We're talking about 80, 90 years after the Maryland Constitution. So the mindset was that the United States was well established as a sovereign nation at that point, and wouldn't have been such an issue, I think, at the time to say you're not part of Great Britain.
Which I find interesting, because in the 1851 Constitution and Declaration of Rights, they've removed that oath requirement and they've removed that portion of the Declaration of Rights. Which I found interesting, in that through all of the Constitution of the United States, and correct me if I'm wrong, they haven't removed similar language from the Declaration of Rights, Declaration of Independence.
You know, I don't think they have. I think you're absolutely right on that, Tom. Tim, sorry.
So some of my concerns about this were originally the 1776 Constitution gave acknowledged the right, I should say, of all free men, unfortunately those who had property, and I believe subsequently in an amendment that they removed that, but all free men with property could vote. And in the 1851 Constitution, it was changed to all free white men could vote. So I see that in the change of Constitution, if I happen to be, and believe they referred to it as colored at that time, if I was a colored free, a free colored man, then they just took away my right for voting.
It would appear that way, wouldn't it?
And if I read the Hart versus White case, you know, the 1776 Constitution would have been a contract between the free colored man and the people, and the trustees, which are the officers. It says that in the Constitution of Maryland. And that the 1851 would have infringed upon that contract, and it would have been null and void.
That's why someone should be able to, that's why someone should be able to assert that they are domiciled in a certain period with them as one of the people of that state. I think that's what we're asserting. Is that correct, Corey?
Well, I absolutely. I think asserting that it's almost any of them prior to the 14th Amendment are the right way to go. You know, at least that's how I see it, that there is nothing beneficial to being a 14th Amendment citizen at this point. So be domiciling in a jurisdiction that is prior to the Civil War has a lot of advantages. And, you know, that's something that clearly the government does not want.
Tim, to throw a little cold water on your theory, though, colored, you know, so-called colored or black people can vote in Maryland now, right? So that's been remedied. It's not an issue. Why do you have to go back to 1776?
Well, in today's the black or colored people that are in Maryland, and I would guess all of them, if not 99.9% of them or more, are 14th Amendment citizens.
Right.
And yes. that is a different form of government, and I'm referring to the Republican form of government.
And where I was going with this was, you're not. It's going to be hard put to find a free black man who lived pre-1851 to say he had that contract. You're saying if you claim you're a free black man in Maryland at domiciled 1776, that you've got that contract.
Well, I would claim also that, you know, so I'm not a colored or black man, but the role of voting was to elect an elector, and then the elector went about and elected the General Assembly and the governor and so forth, although there were some amendments that changed that the people later elected the governor. But them changing that in the Constitution then changed the basis on which the people received a proper representation, and it then warped, if you would, and modified the form of government and controlled it perhaps in a means that would have been unconstitutional. So it would have had the possibility, and certainly infringing upon my right to receive a full Republican form of government rather than a partial one, just that would have been set up only by free white men. In fact, interestingly, on NPR earlier this week, I heard that they just uncovered, I suppose, archaeologists of some sort, evidence that probably the earliest free black men lived on the Eastern Shore in Maryland in 1790.
Wow. That's fascinating. And, you know, even if you were a free black man at that time period, information has always been something that has been a part of warfare, and you know the racist kind of history of this country and elitist history of this country would be to make that information unavailable to people. So it's only recently today that through the magic of technology we're in very far different locations now, and we're able to work on the same types of ideas. Back at this time period, only the elite had this capability of being able to access this information. So we're really, you know, blazing a new trail here with being able to aggregate information, aggregate the constitutions, and really delve through what it is that is remedy in dealing with this out of control government we have.
And speaking of sharing information, and we've got 2 minutes for the next break here, we should take pause and give thanks that Bradley Manning today was announced that his charges of aiding the enemy were acquitted. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
He still faces, I think, 136 years in prison, but at least that part is gone, which is very good.
And losing track of time, too. It could have been yesterday. I think it was today, the 31st. But he still faces a lot of heat. But that one was like the big bell ringer of, you know, if you even remotely give information to the media because of the transmittal of the data you just talked about, Corey, it could be extrapolated that the enemy found it. You put it on the Internet, you know, WikiLeaks, all that. I mean, it was going to be a huge chilling effect of anything of so-called journalism, which is there's very, very little of that being practiced right now, just to be clear. But that would have been a very chilling effect on the media and the way people are dealing with whistleblowing and so forth. So I was pleased to see that there is some common sense, a modicum of it, in that so-called courtroom recently.
It also could be that they don't want the exposure of who the enemy actually is, mm-hmm. and have people realize that being a U.S. citizen makes you an enemy of the United States of America.
Yeah, you got it on Facebook, and therefore it's treason.
That's right.
You know, it's just incredible. We're going to have to take a quick break, everybody. It'll be our last break before our last segment of the show. It's pre-recorded on July 31st. You're listening to us on August 3rd. We appreciate you checking out Common Sense Revisited. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Common Sense Revisited, everybody. Thank you for staying with us. Today, August 3rd, is when you're hearing us. We're recording this on July 31st. Todd McGreevy visiting with Corey Ibe, our special guest, Tim, in Illinois. Tim, you mentioned that in the 1776 Maryland Constitution, that in order to vote, you had to be a free man, and that was defined, I think, as you said, or inferred that you had to own property, correct?
Correct.
And I wrote a note when you said that, you know, and I'm sure this has been, you know, posited before out into the ether, but, you know, can I just say that my body is my property? You know,
I would say, yeah, you could probably argue that if, certainly, some of the property requirements.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure. I'd love to come across some documentation of that, in the Maryland archives of the Chancellor Courts of sort. Because they basically continued with the common law system for the most part, with just a couple minor tweaks that existed during the Charter of Maryland. But some of the property requirements, there were lots of property requirements even for the legislature and the governor and so forth. They had to have 500 pounds of silver or something like that, or I'm sorry, $500, or I'm not sure of the term. I have to look it up again. And they increased considerably as you went from one of the House delegates to the governor.
That's interesting. I've heard – this is going back in the Wayback Machine here in my brain. But I recall somebody talking about that back in the day, you know, the day you're talking about, Tim, the reason they had to have those kind of funds was they had to put up their own bonds.
There is some mention there about bonds, but I believe my interpretation from what I've read on it is that if you were well educated, typically you had property. And as they thought that the best leaders would be those best educated, and rather than those that weren't educated. And so property, right or wrong, was assumed to go hand in hand with those who were educated and honorable and so forth.
Hmm. Interesting. We're going to get some links up at thirdrailblog.com. Because we're recording this on Wednesday, Corey and Tim, I have until Saturday to get it done now. I can really procrastinate. And we're going to get some links up to this White versus Hart. We're going to talk about up there that you know, you might want to go get your own original report, United States reports. We're going to have some links to the things that Corey's been talking about here, some of these vehicle codes, California code, the one that talks about the warning about the communists. You know, I have to share with you, I put this on the table here to remind myself to bring this up on the show today. This is a very well-produced two-sided color postcard about, you know, 8x6, and it's Learn About Your City Government. Join Bettendorf 101 City Citizen Academy. City Citizen Academy, you guys. You're invited to attend the 2013 Fall Bettendorf 101 City Citizen Academy. Classes are held on Thursdays, 6 to 9 p.m., except for bus tours and graduation dinner. You can graduate as a city citizen. Do you have one of these out in Irvine, Corey?
I've not seen one.
Yeah. Could we have some fun with this?
I think so. Can you go ahead? Can you send me that link? I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I don't even sure they have a link on this. It says visit bettendorf.org and click on the link located on the main page. So I'll have to check that out. This is, you know, I've outed myself as to where I technically live here now in terms of municipality. But the Quad Cities is made up of Bettendorf, Iowa, Davenport, Iowa, and then there's Moline and Rock Island, Illinois on the other side of the river. So multiple communities here. And it's just an interesting sidebar. I mean, it's so ingrained in your brain to just be a, you know, this isn't about being one of the people of Iowa is what I'm trying to say, Corey. This is
right, exactly.
And, you know, our tax dollars are being used to, you know, distribute this to every single home, you know, and ramp it up. And I mean, they're doing a good job of making it look, you know, interesting and fun. And you should check it out. And there's a bus tour and a walking tour and, you know. You get to get a dinner, and it's classic. It's classic. Just total keep them indoctrinated.
That's right. From my research, there has just been a push from day one for those who wanted to be in the federal government to have more and more control. George Washington warned us about it. It's just been clear the more you look into the country that – that those that are in power at the federal level just want more power.
And Corey and Tim, people new to this topic, though, when you're talking about the concentration of power, they look at what I just talked about, this little innocuous postcard, and go, well, this is about living in this little town in Iowa. This isn't about the federal government, Todd. You're just really stretching here, you know? Wait, what's your problem? This is just about being a good citizen where we live. Come on.
Well, that's the danger of the deception, is your local police, just like the letter I got from LAPD, acknowledging that they're not officers of the state. They are federal officers, and it's very difficult when you've been indoctrinated for your entire lifetime. It's hard to look at a local police department and say those are federal officers and realize the blurring of jurisdiction that has gone on for many years, trying to literally just confuse people to the point where even the government half the time doesn't know what they're doing.
Now, Corey, I want to argue a fine point here, though. You say that and I've seen the documents that you talked about, that they're not officers of the state, they being municipal police officers. The chief of the municipality, per the Constitution, must be, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's right. Just
because they say that they're not officers of the state, what makes them federal officers? Has that been identified on the other side?
Well, if you look at the incorporation papers of the city is incorporated as a 14th Amendment person. 14th Amendment persons, that is only federal. That's it. There is no state jurisdiction.
And how is the city incorporated as a 14th Amendment? I mean, that's pretty technical.
There's a lot of evidence to show how that happened. But one of them is one of the direct things I have, and I'll get a copy of it to you. It's a order from Governor Duke Majan here in California about private property, talking about that, you know, private property won't just be taken away. And it says that the Fourth Amendment, which is applicable to the state of California via the 14th Amendment. What they're saying is you have to get to the 14th Amendment first, then you can go back to the Fourth Amendment. And
municipalities are derivatives of the state of California GovCo.
That's right. They are political subdivisions of the state.
Yeah. I'm just trying to make sure we're keeping it real here, Corey.
Well, that's good. We have to keep it real.
And that's the same basis, is it not, on how they gave, I forgot the exact timing, but over the last 5 or 8 years, they recognized that corporations as 14th Amendment citizens, essentially, to have the right to influence the elections in terms of their contributions and so forth.
That's right. Those 14th Amendment citizens have... You know, corporations have the same amount of power as birth certificate corporations to influence elections. That IBM is allowed to influence an election just as much as you and I are. If IBM has more money than we do, then IBM can influence the election just strictly based on how much money they've got, and that's it. That's my understanding of that ruling.
Well, gentlemen, I hate to tell you, but we've come upon the end of our show, and I can't believe how fast this time has flown by. There's a lot of information, Tim, that you brought to the table that's, I think, worth exploring even further and further shows here. And Tim has done what we've talked about in the show, and he's called in on the show several times and challenged people, hey, get engaged in your state where you are and do some of this research so we can compare notes. And look how much we're learning when we compare notes and share this. And you know, we can go and try and create some forum and all that. This is not difficult, everybody. This is all there. You should be able to do it where you live. I'm going to guilt you into some action. All right. You know, listen to my brainwashing voice right now, please. Okay. Go to CoreyIbe.com and donate some scratch to help him in Orange County. And if you're not going to do that, then go do some research in your state. Go look up, is your chief of police, does he have an oath of office or she on file? If not, what are the rules and laws in the state governing that? Is that office vacant? Do you have a problem there? Go to morning court. Watch what happens there. Talk to your county sheriff. All the things we've talked about is start your common law ID. Do something. If you're not going to do that, then go to CoreyIbe.com and send him some scratch. We appreciate you listening. This is a pre-recorded show on July 31st. It's airing on August 3rd. Corey, any wrapping remarks? Take us out.
Well, you know, maybe we'll put some notes up. I might put a video up tomorrow about what's happened. We'll get some notes up and kind of keep a little up to date on what's happening with Irvine here. and the court case that's going on where Irvine PD is just acting completely outside the Constitution, and with no authority, they are, you know, stealing people's rights, money, property, everything, exactly what this country fought against.
You're working your tail off out there, and we appreciate you taking the time to do this show tonight and pre-record it so we can have this out there. Tim, thank you for joining us. Please come back, and we're going to sign off here on Common Sense Revisited. Go to thirdrailblog.com for show archives. Take care.